You wouldn't recognize me as the person I was before. Some days I hardly recognize myself. I would fly into a rage or a debilitating despair or irrational terror. Sometimes it was like I was outside my body seeing these things happen, but I couldn't control it. I couldn't stop it. I was a woman imprisoned in my own body, in my own sickness. But the moment Josh saw that, all of that changed. He saw through it. He saw me, and I could tell, even then, he loved me. Because he loved me, I could almost love myself. He saw me across a crowd, and all of a sudden, he was, it's like he was right there before me with those eyes that were already seeing into my soul, and he said simply, "Mary, you're free of it. Be free of it." And I was. That's the way Joshua was, is. He wills you into being more than yourself. He calls you into more than you thought you could be. I mean, take Peter, for instance. Now, I love the guy. Don't get me wrong. But he could not lead his way out of a fishing net. And Jesus says to him that he's going to be the leader of the disciples. And before you know it, Pete begins to believe him. He becomes who Joshua said he could be. I think that's what drew us to him, more than anything he said or did, what he taught or how he lived. It was the way he encouraged us to live our lives more fully before God, to be who we didn't think we could be, to be more than what other people had said we were. All my life, I've been told by the priests and the men at the temple that I was too diseased, too broken, too dirty to ever enter the temple, to even come close to approaching the presence of God. But Josh told me, he helped me believe that God loves me, accepts me, just as I am, just me. No rituals, no priests, no temple necessary. Just to come before God as we are. I think that's also what got him in trouble. Always telling us that God loved us as we were, telling us that he loved us, inviting us to see ourselves through his eyes and to believe that those were the eyes through which God saw us too. We told him, you know, to ratchet it back, this last week especially, always looking over our shoulders, knowing that the authorities were after him or after us. We told him to calm down, to fly low, to let it pass just for a little while, to ratchet it back. But he said he wouldn't do it. He said it was too important. He said we were too important. I wasn't there when they came for him. But I'm told he went without fighting, not even raising his voice. That's Josh, such a gentleman, always being nice to people, even the ones who are trying to do him harm. And so he went away with them. But I was there when they dragged him in front of our high priest, and then the regional overseer and the Roman governor. I was there when they flung accusations in his face, accusations of treason and blasphemy and insurrection. Him, the most peaceful, the most humble, the most faithful man I've ever known. I watched him take their jeers and their lies and their insults without comment. I had to turn away while he took their whip. Instead, I thought of something he said to us once. He said that if there's a price to pay, if there's a consequence for speaking truth, for living with compassion and justice, for the liberation of the poor, for articulating what God wants to say to humanity in the face of every evil, of every oppressor, that he would pay that price. Even if they try to destroy you, James asked, confused and pain written on his face. Yes, Josh said. That is often the price for turning the tables. How right he was when they used that little table-turning incident in the temple court against him. And so while the whip sliced through the air, I thought about those things, and it seemed to hiss, "This is the price. This is the price." And I tried so hard to be loving, like he said, but there are some things in life that are just so wrong. The harm we do to one another. I don't remember much of the walk up the hill. I could barely see the ground in front of me through the tears, but by the time we reached the execution site, my eyes were dry. I remembered that he had seen me in the midst of my darkness, that he had cut through the pain and the grief in my life, that he had healed me by loving me past my brokenness, and I thought the least I could do was bear witness to his. So I made myself watch. Made myself memorize the lines of his face, the sharp stain of blood. I made myself hear the cries all around me. His cries, yes, and the men on either side of him and the people gathered at the foot of the cross. I know some of the cries were my own. And just when I thought I'd gone deaf from all the things I didn't want to hear, I heard his voice cry out, and I thought, thank God, he's going to let them have it. He's going to call down his angels or something and end this nightmare. And he said, Father, forgive them. He was my best friend. He saw the good, he saw God in everyone, from the broken, rage-possessed woman cowering inside her own body to the soldiers mocking him and dividing their plunder at his feet. I loved him more than I'd loved anyone in my life, but in that moment, I hated him. I wanted him to fix it. I wanted him to make it better. I wanted him to confront the evil of the world and to defeat it. I wanted him to be who he said he was, God, powerful enough to make those bad guys suffer, righteous enough to strip them of their power, their lies, their very lives. But instead, he let them win. He gave himself over into their cruel hands. And then to add to that insult, he forgave them? How dare he? This whole time, he'd been saying that God forgives us the worst of ourselves, and I thought I understood him, but I wasn't close. I had no idea what he was talking about, that we could forgive them too. He died soon after that. I know the moment it happened because it seemed like my whole world just went black. The ground shaking beneath my feet, the breath stopping in my throat. I don't know how long the darkness lasted for me. It was still dark this morning. That's what you really wanted to hear about, isn't it, this morning? So I went to the tomb with James's mother, Mary, and Salome, because we wanted to make sure that his body had been tended. Again, I didn't really want to be there. I thought, I didn't want to see him with that life and that vibrancy missing from him, who had always been so very alive. I didn't want to touch his skin and feel the coldness seeping into my fingers. But I thought that he'd done so much for me. He'd given me back my life. I don't even know if back is the right word. I don't know that I'd ever really lived until he set me free. So I owed him the honor of taking care of his body. We were almost to the tomb when we realized that we didn't have any way to move that big stone from the mouth of it. I mean, we were pretty tough ladies, but there are only three of us, and that was a big rock. But we kept going because we thought maybe the guards could help us move the stone. Maybe if we cried and begged, they'd take pity on us, and they would give us some assistance. Pity? A Roman soldier, Salome had said, and we laughed a little at that. It seemed wrong to laugh with Josh lying in a cold grave just around the bend in the path. The smile was just fading from my face when we came in sight of the tomb and all of us stopped short. Mary reacted first, a guttural cry of rage and anguish, as if it wasn't enough that they had tortured him and killed him in front of us. They had to desecrate his burial place too? The stone was completely gone, was haphazardly lying off to the side like it had been thrown there. The tomb, the mouth of it gaped like a pit in the darkness. I knew. A chill ran all the way up my spine and back down. I knew before I even bent to look in, but I had to be sure. I had to check. Maybe someone had already been to tend him, and he was wrapped up and lying peacefully. So I looked inside the tomb. But he wasn't there. The tomb wasn't empty, though. There was a man sitting there, gazing back at us like it was the most natural thing in the world, like he'd been expecting us. And he said, "You're looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He's not here. He has been raised. But you'll see him again, just like he promised. Go tell the disciples that he will be with you all in Galilee." His voice was gentle, but his words went through me like a spear. We didn't say anything to him. We didn't say anything to one another. For this long moment, we just stood there staring at each other. And then we ran, stumbling back along the path. Not proud of it. I can't even really say why I did it. There was just something so horrifying about those man's words. I ran until my lungs were on fire. I ran like I've never run in my life. I think we all got just a little piece of it in that moment. What it must mean, not that Josh is alive, that's the good part, but that he is really somehow divine. That the person we've known for so long is someone and something far more frightening, far more powerful, far more wonderful, far more terrifying than anything we've ever imagined. Not our friend, not our teacher, divinity in the flesh. It was too much. But we did eventually tell the disciples, and I came back with Peter and John. And they too looked into the tomb and they left quickly, babbling and laughing with the joy of the empty tomb. And I stayed for a few minutes, just trying to take it all in, trying to wrap my head and my heart around the past couple of days and make some sort of sense of it. I didn't even realize I was crying until I felt the little splash of the tear across the back of my hand. I went back to the tomb because I had to check again just to see if it was still empty. Josh still wasn't there. This time there were two men, and they asked me why I was crying. I said, "I'm looking for my Lord, and I don't know where they've laid him." And then from behind me, another voice spoke. "Why are you weeping?" The truth is, at that point, I didn't even know. It had just been so much, so fast, and the overwhelming desire just to see Josh, just to make sure that somehow he was okay, one way or the other, to know for sure, to know where he was. It overwhelmed me, it possessed me, and I said, "Please, sir, if you have taken him away, just tell me where he is. I just want to make sure that he's someplace safe." He spoke again, just one word, just my name. Mary. And I knew. It was him. He was exactly the same, and yet he looked kind of different somehow, or maybe I was seeing him differently, or seeing him for the first time in a way. And I ran to him, and I threw my arms around him despite his protests, just to see if he was really as solid as he looked, and in part because I could not contain my joy. He was warm and real, and I could feel his pulse, that living pulse beneath my palms, alive. He's alive. So what does it mean? I confess that I don't really know. I'm still trying to figure out what it means to lose a friend and gain a Lord. I do know that it's not about getting it all right the first time around, because I certainly didn't. And it's not about having all the answers, because I sure don't. I do know that it's a journey. It's a path, like the path that leads into the garden and to the tomb and then back into Jerusalem and to the whole world beyond. And I do know it has something to do with the fact that he loved me and he called me a woman who no one else would take the time of day for. Someone who demonstrated anger when he demonstrated forgiveness, who ran in fear when I should have leapt for joy. I do know that Josh has always said that God is love. And maybe it just begins with trying to love like Josh does, trying to live our lives with that kind of joy, that kind of blessing. I don't know where you are today. Maybe you feel a little bit like Peter. You feel like you've made some mistakes, or you've turned your back on God, and you're wondering about second chances. Maybe you feel like the Roman soldiers who are wondering if there is compassion for those who have made a wrong choice or a different choice. Maybe you're like Thomas and you still need some convincing. Maybe you've loved before, and in loving, you were vulnerable and you got hurt. And we're talking about a lot of vulnerability here. We're talking about trying to love the whole world. Maybe you're like me and you're beginning to believe, but you don't know what it means or what to do with it yet. I don't know where you are. I don't know who you are. But I know who Josh is, who Jesus is. And I know that his love is for everyone, no matter who we are. And I know that this good news today, this is for everyone, no matter what. And more than anything, more than I've ever known anything in my life, I know that he is alive. Not just here in a sacred place, in a garden, but out there, in the world, in you, in me, in all that has life today and every day. I know he lives.